Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded changemakers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In the previous episode, I talked about unhindering, relieving, setting free ourselves by letting go, specifically letting go of 6 common toxic beliefs. Because your beliefs push your thoughts, and your thoughts push your actions or behavior, letting go of sabotaging beliefs is the prerequisite to bringing about desired change in your life. In this episode, we'll consider the importance of letting go of one other source of toxicity: other people. Letting go of a toxic person has been, and continues to be, a toughie for me. And this episode is largely my ongoing story of that personal challenge. I hope it contains some nuggets of value for you if there's anyone in your life you suspect or consider to be toxic. And what do I mean by toxic? Well, toxic means poisonous. And the Oxford Dictionary defines poison as a substance that is capable of causing the illness or death of a living organism when introduced or absorbed. My definition of a toxic person is this: a person who is capable of causing you physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, or social unwellness, sometimes horrifyingly to the point of death, when in contact with them. A toxic person undermines your well-being. Here's my personal story of a toxic relationship. Once upon a time, there was a 17-year-old girl named Annie who had an urgent desire to leave home, leave her faith-centered community, and start a new life anonymously as a university student. Anonymously, because she felt everyone in her small community knew all about her, and she believed she wasn't much liked by family or neighbors. The opportunity to carry on where no one knew you or disliked you was hugely enticing. No one back home realized Annie was running away. She had a loving, caring, close-knit family. She had a boyfriend who'd already talked marriage. She was an active member in a community comprised of people who would give you the shirts off their backs, as the saying goes. But the dislike Annie was running away from, unknown to her until many years later, was her self-dislike, which, of course, she'd bring with her wherever she'd tried to run to. Why Annie carried that burden with her is a whole other story. But suffice it to say, here and now, it was somehow formed in the messy mix of feelings. Ironically feeling invisible as a middle child in a family of 8 siblings, yet feeling under the microscope of her community. Feeling both at odds with and enmeshed in her faith. Feeling alienated from classmates due to her striving for top marks at school. Feeling like a social pariah. Within about 3 months on campus, Annie met her future husband. She ditched the boyfriend back home who represented the life she was dumping. She met, let's call him Andy, in a bar. It was his alcohol-fueled laughter, giggling almost, that first pulled her into his orbit. Annie had always had a very suppressed laugh. She felt completed by Andy. He treated her, the formerly invisible one, like a princess, so caring, thoughtful, and considerate. He was of a different faith that didn't really matter much to him, and neither did Annie's continuing striving for academic excellence. Andy was content just to get by in his classes, and wonderfully he came as part of a package of longtime friends who welcomed Annie into their social circle. As Andy's fun times laughter was so captivating to Annie, so in the beginning was his anger. his ability to get angry. Anger was another thing Annie had great difficulty expressing because it was absent from her childhood home. She learned very well how not to get angry, how to be a people pleaser so people didn't get angry at her. She excelled at people pleasing, actually, because when you feel you're unlikable, you'll give what it takes to try to compensate for that. Equal to Annie's giving was Andy's taking. Annie, make me feel happier. They fit together like pieces of a puzzle. Years later, Annie would come to understand it wasn't a puzzle at all. It's known to psychologists that people of equal states of personal development tend to bond in romantic, business, or friendship relationships. It's shared familiarity. It's a level playing field. You have issues at a certain level, so do I, even though our issues might manifest differently. So at the ripe old age of 21, after 4 years of getting to know Andy, they married. Yes, he had issues, she knew. His anger was a little over the top, as was his drinking. But Annie was confident love and caring would heal Andy. Besides, although again this wasn't consciously known to Annie at the time, focusing on Andy's issues relieved Annie of the much harder and scarier task of focusing on her own issues. So they carried on their married existence with lots of diversions from addressing their personal issues. Bought their house, had their 4 kids, worked their full-time jobs to live paycheck to paycheck. It was Annie who caved first. The status quo couldn't keep on quoing. Her marriage wasn't the happily ever after she'd been raised to expect. She bottomed out. Andy hadn't addressed his issues. She hadn't fixed him, and she hadn't thought to address her own issues. Their finances were a disaster, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And oh my God, they were always both so, so busy. About 15 years into the marriage, Annie took herself to a therapist. "You need to fix him," she demanded of the therapist, who, without a blink of his eye, pointed out that Andy wasn't with them in the therapist's office to be fixed. He also said that it's virtually impossible to change someone else, and it's really hard work to change yourself, but that's the only recourse if you want to bring about change in your life. Annie didn't buy it at first, but when Melody Beattie, the author of Codependent No More, more or less told her the same thing, Annie had a eureka moment, finally getting it, that change must and can only happen from the inside out. For the next decade, Annie voraciously consumed learnings from books, speakers, support groups, and therapists. One day, a group leader pointed out that in relationships where one of the parties is on a healing or growth trajectory and the other one is not, the trajectories begin to diverge. The parties no longer share personal issues on the same level. One party gains advantageous insights and healing techniques not available to or employed by the other. The party not on the self-awareness, self-development, redemption arc begins to appear toxic to the party experiencing personal growth. Annie, in a healthier place and better understanding her own toxic beliefs, thoughts, and behaviors that had brought her to where she was in life, came to the scary realization that maintaining the status quo of her marriage would be a continuous toxic act of self-sabotage. The thought of separation was frightening because they still had pre-adult children to raise and they still teetered on the financial cliff. Had Andy suddenly become a toxic person, changed so drastically from the giggling guy she'd accepted a marriage proposal from? No, it was the opposite, actually, Annie realized. It was because she'd changed so drastically from the person who'd accepted the marriage proposal. Over time and with increasing self-awareness, she'd come to love and like herself enough to recognize her unhealthy people-pleasing tendency that was a main culprit in keeping her in a relationship that no longer worked. She developed self-worth and realized she owed it to her worthy self to get out from under Andy's draining, pervasive negativity. A healthy relationship, Annie had come to know, whether with a coworker, friend, community member, or life partner, is one where one party is lifted up, encouraged, and bettered by the other. Sometimes one party will be doing the lifting, and sometimes it's the other, but overall there is balance. When the balance is out of whack, toxicity seeps in, meaning instead of mutual lifting up, there is dragging down and holding back. After 26 years of marriage, Annie screwed up the courage to separate from Andy in order to create a healthy physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual distance in their relationship. It worked for them to remain in each other's life after separation, sharing family celebrations and supporting each other through tough times. In their ongoing post-separation interactions, Annie continued to work on developing and maintaining robust personal boundaries in order to facilitate a healthy, happy ever after. The end. Which is not an end. My story is of a specific circumstance of toxicity in a relationship, characterized by diverging personal development trajectories, though it's not an uncommon one. Of course, there are many different types of situations where you could be involved with a toxic person. Often, a person's true nature is not evident until you're deep into a relationship with them. In a PsychologyToday.com article titled, "Why Toxic People Are So Harmful," the writer, Stephanie A. Sarkis, Ph.D., who is the author of the book Gaslighting, Recognize Manipulative and Emotionally Abusive People and Break Free, makes the key points that toxic people can be self-centered, manipulative, abusive, and lacking in empathy. Toxic people drain others' energy by constantly demanding attention, sympathy, or validation. And toxic people tend to disrespect emotional and physical boundaries. The article notes, and I quote, "They may be referred to as narcissistic, selfish, or sociopathic. They may mask their negative traits by being charming or friendly. Some common behaviors of toxic people include constant criticism, gaslighting, passive-aggressive behavior, and a need for power and control. If you call this behavior to their attention, they may criticize you for having an issue with their behavior. They will then falsely portray themselves as the victim and you as the perpetrator." End of quote. It's been my experience, however, that toxicity in relationships is not necessarily easily detectable, especially when viewed through the very cloudy lens of a self-disliking person, low in self-esteem and self-worth, and having almost non-existent self-awareness. The struggle that kept me in a relationship for 30 years was the matter of discerning if the pain and unhappiness I was experiencing was attributable to him or me. Sure, he had anger issues, a victim mentality, complained and criticized constantly, turned to substances to self-medicate. But was it my behavior that was to blame? Was it because I couldn't love him enough or in the right way? After all, my commitment to the relationship in the beginning, when I saw the red flags, was that my love would heal him and make him happy. Obviously, I was failing at that. He had a rough childhood, carried lots of pain from traumatic events. How could I not stick with him to help him get better? Besides, you know what? I, the unlikable me, and yes, the unfaithful me, as I shared in an earlier story, deserved the misery I was experiencing. It was my penance. I could bear it stoically. And he had positive attributes. He helped out with domestic tasks. He made nice dinners. He brought me flowers. He remembered and celebrated special occasions. I developed a broader life perspective by entering his world. But because of my impaired vision, I couldn't see in our relationship the toxicity that others could see. Until, through self-awareness and self-healing work, my vision cleared sufficiently. My takeaways from this rather protracted life lesson are these. Number one, toxicity in a relationship can be challenging for you to recognize if you yourself are struggling with self-worth and self-love. The toxic behaviors you experience become what you believe you deserve. Two, the other person's toxic behavior is never, ever because you're not good enough or loving enough. You cannot ever give enough love or caring or support to another person who doesn't love and care for themselves. It's like trying to fill a bucket with water when there's a hole in the bucket. Three, the best protection from toxicity is robust personal boundaries, which was the topic of a previous Better Me, Better World episode. Once you acknowledge that you cannot change another person, you can divert your time and energy to developing and maintaining your healthy boundaries through which toxins cannot seep. You can stand firm in what behavior you'll accept. Number four, a toxic person does not have to be considered a bad person. Too often, it seems to me, a person choosing to leave a relationship feels compelled to broadcast why their ex is such a horrible person. Often, but certainly not always, the ex possesses the very same personality traits that made them attractive in the first place. Frequently, again not always, what makes a person toxic is their words and/or behaviors that emanate from their unresolved personal issues, their unrecognized and unaddressed negative character traits, their stunted personal growth, their holding on to patterns of behavior that may have once served them well but now sabotage their relationships. To my thinking, a person's toxicity is bad, but the person themselves could very well be someone who's doing the best they know how, who's loving the best they know how, but it's impeded by lack of self-awareness, self-motivation, or ability. Number five, if compassion and empathy are directed towards a toxic person, it must always be from the safe place within your healthy personal boundaries. Number six, it is unhealthy to hold on to unforgiveness. You might never be able to forget the impact of toxic words or actions. However, holding on to unforgiveness is like holding on to a burning coal you intend on throwing at the other person. It's you who gets burned. Unforgiveness is doable when you are in a healthy, safe place. Number seven, always take care of yourself first. It's not a selfish approach. An analogy is making sure you have your own oxygen mask on first in a plane emergency. Without it, you're no help to anyone. Taking care of yourself involves making sure you have enough emotional energy to meet your own needs. This can't happen when you're giving everything to someone who doesn't reciprocate. Finally, number eight, remain grateful for the good things and the good times that have come out of your relationship with the toxic person. As I mentioned earlier, my ex possesses positive traits. He is generous in giving to others. I am truly thankful for the constructive aspects of our relationship. There are certainly other benefits to healthfully responding to a toxic person, but instead of reactively responding, the best case scenario is proactively developing an antidote to the toxin, which is getting yourself into a holistically healthy state. A person's toxic behavior cannot do significant harm to you if you are in a good enough place yourself so that you can say, I don't deserve this, and I will not tolerate it. Being well also means you're wearing a Teflon coat, and the other person's poisoned, tipped slings and arrows will harmlessly slide off you. This Better Me, Better World series so far has been focusing on the Be You journey, the way of becoming a healthier version of yourself. This becoming cannot happen unless you let go of self-sabotaging beliefs, thoughts, behaviors, and toxic people. In an autumn walk one day, I contemplated the beauty of a maple tree with a little bit of remaining colorful fall foliage, brilliant against the backdrop of a crisp blue sky. This, I thought, is Mother Nature vividly demonstrating the beauty and necessity of letting go. New growth cannot happen in the spring unless the old leaves are let go in the fall and the tree is laid bare and vulnerable during the winter. Vulnerability is an unavoidable aspect of letting go. There is comfort and familiarity in holding on to the ways you've always believed, thought, and acted, of holding on to people who have always been there, even if these things and people brought you to a place in life where you're not happy. Letting go of toxic things can be like undressing until you're standing naked, exposed. But knowing that discarding your old costume that life designed for you so that you can replace it with a costume you designed for yourself enables you to embrace that stage of vulnerability. If you caught it in a previous Better Me, Better World episode, you may recall that the Be You journey, spelled with the letters B and U, has an alternative meaning to becoming you, where the letters B and U stand for becoming un-F-withable. You have to replace the F with a word I can't say on radio. As defined by the Urban Dictionary, un-F-withable is a state of being where you are at peace and in touch with yourself, and nothing anyone says or does bothers you, and no negativity or drama can touch you. That's the ideal state of being I personally strive for, and my forward movement in that direction will be impeded as long as I'm hanging on to beliefs, thoughts, behaviors, and other people that are holding me back, keeping me small, weighing me down, putting obstacles in the way of me authentically and uniquely living a life of meaning and purpose. I'll never get right to that ideal state. No one can, but from my life experience so far, moving in that direction has had many rewards already, and I eagerly look forward to the rewards yet to come as I continue my BU journey. Those rewards are all types of freedoms. That's what letting go brings you, freedom. Freedom to be the you were born to be by letting go of the belief that you need to live someone else's vision of you. Freedom to feel comfortable in your own skin, warts and all, by letting go of the need for approval or validation by others. Freedom to make mistakes or fail, which can be used as valuable life lessons by letting go of perfectionism. Freedom to use your voice by letting go of your belief of not enoughness. Freedom to grow by letting go of the fear of change. Freedom to have fulfilling relationships by letting go of toxic people, and so on and so on. And on goes self-development, personal growth, self-empowerment, whatever term makes most sense to you to describe what I call the Be You journey. It's unending, with a destination that is always a few more steps away, because the more you become aware, the more you realize how much more aware you can become. Actualizing a better version of yourself, being able to let go, totally hinges on self-awareness. You can't achieve the freedoms I just spoke of until you're able to let go, and you can't let go without self-awareness. My favorite reminder of this is a quote by Carl Jung, which I've shared in previous episodes. He said, Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. I'll say it again. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. And I say, a life directed by fate is the opposite of a life of freedom. The only tool to make the unconscious conscious is self-awareness. I've spoken at length of the process of making the unconscious conscious in a previous episode, so I won't retell that. And in the next episode, I will be talking further about self-awareness. But in the few remaining minutes we have here, I'll share some additional self-awareness quotes that are particularly meaningful to me. Bill Hybels succinctly said, "Self-awareness allows you to self-correct." I like it because it goes right to the heart of the matter. If you want to correct or change something in your life, you can't do it if you aren't aware of what needs correcting. Says T.D. Jakes, "If you always do what you've always done, you'll always be where you've always been." So if you're not fussy on staying where you've always been, you need to be aware of why you're always doing what you've always done. You might know what behaviors you want to change, but until you know the why behind them, they're virtually impossible to change. I'm reminded of a loved one whose life is extremely unhappy to the point of chronic depression and substance abuse. He intellectually knows what needs to be addressed, i.e. recover from depression and end the self-medicating, and he's been vainly attempting to do so on his own without undertaking the scary, difficult inner work to gain awareness of the why behind his challenges. Address the why, and the what can be resolved. Another favorite person I've quoted elsewhere, Brené Brown, said, "Owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it." But how can we own our story if we aren't aware of the content of our story? And if we can't own it, we're fated to spend our lives running from the things we don't like about it and ourselves. Like me, as I talked about earlier, trying to run away from my dislike. I don't know whom to attribute this quote to, but it's an important one. Says someone, "Self-awareness doesn't stop you from making mistakes. It allows you to learn from them." This is a freedom I mentioned earlier. When you're aware of a mistake, misstep, unhealthy choice, or whatever the oops is that you've made, that awareness empowers you to learn from it and avoid making the same mistake over and over again, like someone repeatedly getting into unhealthy relationships. Having awareness of the why behind your mistake flips a stumbling block into a stepping stone. Thomas Carlyle said, "The greatest of faults is to be conscious of none." Is ignorance blissful, or is it a fault? Ignorance perpetuates the status quo because there's no known reason for change. Awareness of an area of improvement in yourself or your life will surely necessitate inner work that's decidedly not blissful or easy, but is not short-term pain for long-term gain more rewarding than vice versa? As Matthew Musk explains it, there is no self-development without self-awareness. You can read as many books as you like, but if you're unable to read yourself, you'll never learn a thing. I've shared an anecdote previously about how years ago as a teenager, when I first picked up a self-help book, I tossed it aside as garbage because I had no idea how it could apply to me. I had no read on myself. Related to this, Tao Te Ching said, "When the student is ready, the teacher will appear." I wasn't anywhere near ready to be taught from that book way back then, when my self-awareness was almost non-existent. When I began developing self-awareness, I couldn't absorb enough self-help material. I was ready and I was learning from amazing teachers. And finally, to wrap up, I'll go back into time to William Shakespeare, who said, "This above all, to thine own self be true." And back way farther to Socrates, who simply said, "Know thyself." How, I ask, can you be true to thine own self if you don't know thine own self? For millennia, it's been known that self-awareness enables a truly authentic life of meaning and purpose. This concludes this show on letting go some more, specifically letting go of toxic people, as well as our investigation of the nature of self-awareness that is crucial to letting go and living fully. I invite you to tune into the next episode of Better Me, Better World that talks about the AAA compass that you can use to guide yourself along the BU journey. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.